This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you. Just a quick reminder, a week from Monday, and we're going to get Marianne on tomorrow to talk about this. A week from Saturday, I will be in Los Angeles, March 28th. I believe that's the Saturday, 28th. Yeah, it's 28th and 29th. I'll be in L.A. Speak at the Sister Giant Conference, along with Senator Sanders and Congressman Kucinich and his wife, Elizabeth Kucinich, and I believe that Alan Grayson is going to be there. It's going to be a bunch of us, so it should be a lot of fun. Sistergiant.org is the website for that. California is running low on water. I don't know if you saw it, but there was a piece published in, I believe it was Science, it might have been Nature, this was last week, or earlier this week, that just came right out and said what I've been saying to you on this show for well over a year. You'll recall a year ago when we were getting this insane Arctic air here in Washington, D.C., which is, you know, we're south of the Mason-Dixon line. It ain't supposed to happen here, or at least not with any frequency. I came on this program and I had a couple of, you know, I had various climate experts on and I discussed it with them and everybody was like, well, maybe, maybe not. Who knows? And I said, you know, it just seems common sense to me that cold air should stay in the Arctic and warm air should stay here south of the Mason-Dixon line. And when the two mix, something's wrong. And could it be that the something that's wrong is that the Arctic is warming faster than the rest of the planet, and therefore the space between the Arctic and us, which would be the jet stream, is being corrupted? And yeah, sure enough, the scientific study came out this week saying, yeah, expect the jet stream to be more wavy up and down. And of course, in the inside of those waves, when those waves drool down onto North America, is us, at least us on the East Coast, us on the West Coast, don't get that because the jet stream used to be held in place by the difference in temperature between the Arctic and here. Now the jet stream is being held in place by mountain ranges. So the Rocky Mountains, which you'll recall go all the way up into Alaska, the Rocky Mountains and all the way down toward Mexico, the Rocky Mountains are blocking the jet stream from drooling down into California and bringing a, you know, rain there. So what we've got is this massive and probably permanent drought in the American Southwest and this insane cold in the American Midwest and Northeast. So that is going on. There's a bunch of stuff here I want to share with you. Yesterday somebody called and told me about this Ron Reagan ad that he recorded for the Freedom From Religion Foundation. And Anne Laurie Gaylor sent me a note about this. She said, this is our 30-second spot. I'm going to play it for you in just a second here. She says, it debuted on Daily Show and Colbert Report last spring. We intended it for 60 Minutes and Rachel Maddow. And they raised the money, but then CBS and NBC said no. And ABC said no. She said, we're currently running some rebroadcast of the Daily Show and are still trying a few ads with CNN this week and next week. Here is the ad with Ron Reagan, Ron, you know, the young Ron Reagan, the man that I think of as just, you know, one of our great intellects in the United States. Here he is.
Hi, I'm Ron Reagan, an unabashed atheist, and I'm alarmed by the intrusions of religion into our secular government. That's why I'm asking you to support the Freedom From Religion Foundation, the nation's largest and most effective association of atheists and agnostics, working to keep state and church separate, just like our founding fathers intended. Please support the Freedom From Religion Foundation. Ron Reagan, lifelong atheist, not afraid of burning in hell.
Ah, there you go. Not afraid of burning in hell. So anyhow, just an FYI for that. You can find it on YouTube, and I'm guessing the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF, they have to have a website. I should have Googled for it. What is it? FFRF.org. Okay, great. Yeah, it makes perfect sense. So that's going on. want to tell you also about another project that I'm peripherally involved with, where Louis Schwartzberg has made some just brilliant movies. Louis and I went to see a movie that he made that is playing at the Smithsonian right now, about things that are too big to see and too small to see, you know, like universes and the skin of an insect. And it's just an amazing movie, and Louis has made some incredible films. And we've got this new project, Fantastic Fungi, and Louis is running a Kickstarter campaign to try to fund it. But you can get all the information about Fantastic Fungi at fantasticfungi.com, FantasticFungi.com. So just an FYI, I want to let you know about that. Israel, in my opinion, I think that we need to start talking about Israel as it is, not as we would like it to be. You know, I remember Israel when I started going to Israel in the 1970s. Israel was the reliable bastion of liberalism, and they still have a national health care system, and they still have, you know, good unemployment insurance, and they still have, in fact, the settlers that Bibi is putting into the West Bank, they're getting 10, 20, 30,000, depends on whose numbers you're using. But they're getting a lot of money every year to subsidize the fact that they're settling on land that, according to the UN, Israel doesn't have the right to settle. So I'm frankly, given Bibi Netanyahu, now he's coming out and saying, oh, yeah, two-state solution. Sure, I'm down with that. So either he was lying to his frightened, racist, bigoted peeps day before yesterday on election day when he said, no, two-state solution as long as I'm prime minister. Either he was lying then or he's lying now. But in either case, Bibi Netanyahu has revealed himself to be a liar. Not just a liar, a sleazy politician. I mean, you've got even Thomas Friedman, who's one of the most reliable supporters of Israel on earth, in today's New York Times, trashing Netanyahu and saying, you know, it's a whole new world now. Israel is an apartheid state, just like South Africa was. And it's time to start referring to Israel as the apartheid state of Israel, in my opinion. And I am a big supporter of Israel. I would love to see Israel go back to their small d democratic roots. And what's so bizarre is that Netanyahu has succeeded in Israel in creating the same sort of thing that George W. Bush did here. Right wingers are really good at this. You know, they know how to kill people. They know how to beat the crap out of people. They know how to frighten and intimidate people. And then when people react to that, they know how to circle the wagons. So just like, you know, President Obama called this out. This is clip number four here, Jim. President Obama pointed out who created ISIS. Here he is.
ISIL is a direct outgrowth of Al-Qaeda in Iraq that grew out of our invasion, which is an example of unintended consequences, which is why we should generally aim before we shoot.
Right. That from Vice News. So Obama just came out and blamed ISIS on George W. Bush and Dick Cheney. Right? Pretty straightforward stuff. Similarly, Bibi Netanyahu can blame, what he does. You know, what Netanyahu has done is basically he has created a lot of really, really angry, upset people, as Bush did in Iraq and Afghanistan. And then when those angry, upset people kick back at you, he's going, oh, my God, we've got to stomp on them even harder. I think it's, by the way, I'll tell you this after the break. Stick around.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We have to consider whether the United States should veto any future UN efforts to hold Israel accountable the way we have in the past. Welcome back. 15 minutes past the hour. Gene in Amherst, Wisconsin. Hey, Gene, thanks for watching Free Speech TV. What's on your mind?
Yeah, Tom, let me get you off speaker so I can hear you. You hear me now?
Yep. So what's up, Gene?
Yeah. So a couple of quick things. It's curious that Walker, he busted up the public unions of the one association AKA Union, he did not mess with is the Wisconsin State Police.
Right.
And the curious thing is, in the last 2 weeks, he's recommended a 17% increase, though the Republican-controlled Congress is actually against it. Number two, let your callers know that to contact Congress people, other than the 202 number in D.C., they can just Google the guy's name. And, for example, Johnson in Wisconsin only has two offices, but McConnell has six offices in the state of Kentucky.
Right.
So it's rather easy to get through.
Yeah, just call one of the local offices, yes.
Yeah, and then the third final thing, I just want to get your opinion. The Koch brothers are obviously intelligent men.
Yes.
Why do you think they haven't seen the writing on the wall and get into solar and wind?
Well, we don't know that they haven't, first of all. An awful lot of the billions that they have is not transparent. It's a privately held corporation, Koch Industries, and many of their other corporations that they have are privately held. So we have no idea. I mean, they might have invested $3 billion or $30 billion in wind or solar, and we would have no way of knowing it, on the one hand. On the other hand, fossil fuels, and Koch Industries is a fossil fuel company, or it started out as one, fossil fuels are insanely profitable because not only do we subsidize their exploration and extraction and refining, we subsidize all of these, but we also, we just basically make it really easy and really profitable for fossil fuel companies. Solar and wind companies, you know, if they generate externalities, if they're generating waste, if they're spoiling the land or whatever, they have to pay for that. They have to deal with the externalities. The fossil fuel industry doesn't. So I think the Koch brothers are just saying, let's squeeze another 5 years out of this thing. Let's squeeze another 10 years out of it. It'll be another $10, $20 billion.
Yeah, I understand that. But the Koch brothers, they have an ad up here in Wisconsin, I'm sure elsewhere, but it's talked about all the things they do, and they never mention that. It would just seem, why not say they do that in sun and solar and wind, and maybe some of the wrath of the people would not be against them so much. That's all.
It's a suggestion, Gene. And while I doubt that Koch Industries comes to this program for PR advice, if they wanted to greenwash themselves, one way to do it would be to build or buy a good sized solar farm someplace in California, or a wind farm in Iowa or Texas or something like that. I mean, both are all over the country. And point to it in their advertising. I don't disagree, but I'm telling you the reason why Koch Industries and the Koch brothers are blowing up any efforts to have more subsidies and more encouragement and more support for wind and solar, why they so strongly oppose any efforts to diminish the subsidies and supports for fossil fuels is just, short-term gain. They're willing to exchange the long-term future of our planet, which, they're not so much longer for being on this planet, being old white guys, the long-term future of this planet in exchange for another decade of riches. Gene, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. We'll be back. It's 20 minutes past the hour. President Obama, he's kind of, it's like Obama unleashed, he's said a number of things recently that I think are just fascinating. One of them pointing out that during the 6 years that he has been president, the Republicans have been doing absolutely everything they can to destroy his presidency. Absolutely everything they can. Even to the point of bringing in a foreign leader to humiliate the president by speaking before Congress. I'll get back to Israel in just a second. And yet, Obama's policies seem to be working. So here's a couple of clips from President Obama on these things. Here's clip number one. This is President Obama on the stock market.
One Republican in Congress warned our policies would diminish employment and diminish stock prices. Stock market's doubled since I came into office.
Yeah, there you go. The stock market has doubled since he came. That's pretty substantial. I don't know. Maybe FDR could say that. But this is Obama on the deficit and gas prices. Clip number two, Jim.
One Republican senator claimed we faced $1 trillion deficits as far as the eye can see. Another predicted my to $6.60 a gallon.
Right. Another one predicted the gas was going to be $6.60 a gallon. And here's President Obama talking about what John Boehner said about jobs. Clip number three.
And right here in Cleveland, the leader of the House Republicans, a good friend of mine, he captured his party's economic theories by critiquing mine with a very simple question. Where are the jobs, he said? Where are the jobs? Well, after 12 million new jobs, stock market that's more than doubled, deficits that have been cut by two-thirds, healthcare inflation at the lowest rate in nearly 50 years, manufacturing coming back, auto industry coming back, clean energy doubled. I've come not only to answer that question, but I want to return to the debate that is central to this country and the alternative economic theory that's presented by the other side.
Right. This is the point. And I was touching on this yesterday, and I think it's worth revisiting. We were talking yesterday about how astonishing it is that the average sucker, the average Republican voter, that being, you know, my hypothesis that in the Republican Party, there are basically two kinds of people. There are rich people and there are suckers. That the average Republican sucker doesn't think through the economic policies of the Republicans and has no historical understanding, has no economic understanding. They, you know, they're just operating off bumper stickers and things. And they're so easily manipulated, therefore. And so, for example, you know, the Koch brothers and Koch Industries or ExxonMobil or, you know, other big fossil fuel interests come in and say, you know, as long as we have these federal subsidies, we in the fossil fuel industry are profitable. As long as we're not being made to clean up our mess, and as long as every day that goes by, we can pump another few, you know, 100 million tons of waste material into the atmosphere and inject it under the ground, as long as that happens, we're profitable. This is what the fossil fuel industry is saying. Keep the status quo. Keep things the way they are. And thus, they are funding this climate change denial industry. And the climate change denial industry is all about maintaining profits for the fossil fuel barons, the Koch brothers, the you know, Rex Tillerson, the CEO of ExxonMobil, and on it goes. And this is, you know, not even arguably, this is not how a democracy should work. And one of the things that allows these right-wing fossil fuel billionaires to get away with pulling in the suckers, the rubes, aside from things like Fox News just literally inventing out of thin air experts. Do you have that clip, Jim? You didn't get that? Okay. Brent Baer yesterday. It's like, well, according to the official numbers, Obamacare has increased coverage for, what, 12 million people? However, one independent expert that we talked to said that the number is actually much lower than that. Who's that independent expert, Brett Baer? Not saying. Who does he work for? Is he or she? Heritage Foundation? Right Wing Crazies, Inc.? I mean, you know, who is? Oh, not saying. Fox News. Brett Baer theoretically does news on Fox so-called news. Right? I mean, you've got the commentators like Bill O'Reilly, and then you've got, quote, the news people like Brett Baer. But how do you do news on a network that is anti-science and anti-news? Well, you have to lie to people. You come up, you literally invent experts out of thin air.
An independent expert said that's nonsense.
Oh, really? Oh, it must be nonsense. Thank you, Brett. Okay, back to Israel, just real quick. Every time that there is a resolution in the UN Security Council or in the United Nations to hold Israel to task, you know, to hold them responsible for what's going on, for example, in Gaza, the one reliable veto is the United States. I would say to President Obama, if I was calling his comment line at 202-456-1111, or if I was calling a member of Congress at 202-225-3121, although I think, frankly, the White House is the recipient for this, stop using veto power in the UN Security Council on behalf of Netanyahu. I would not say on behalf of Israel. This is on behalf of Netanyahu.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
I mean, we're sending them $3 billion a year. We're dancing to their tune, and Netanyahu is basically trashing our president? Really? Well, meanwhile, as the Senate Republicans lay out their budget to slash Social Security, to slash Medicare, to slash Medicaid, to slash aid to education, to slash Pell Grants, to basically do away with anything that might help working people or the working poor or even the middle class in the United States. The Republicans roll out a budget to destroy all that effort, all that progress in the last 90 years. Well, 80 years. As the Republicans do that, the Democrats in the House Progressive Caucus have rolled out their own budget, the Congressional Progressive Caucus's People's Budget, A Raise for America. And A Raise for America creates more than 8 million good jobs by 2018, increases functionality worker protection agencies, includes a 4% raise for federal workers, provides paid leave initiative and child care, supports minimum wage increase and collective bargaining. And then they reverse austerity, repeal sequester, increases discretionary funding to invest in working families, reverses harmful cuts and enhances social safety net, invests in veterans, women, communities of color, and their families. Fair individual taxes, equalizes tax rates for investment income and income from work. In other words, it does away with the special treatment for capital gains tax that Mitt Romney gets. Returns to Clinton-era tax rates for households making over $250,000. Implements new tax brackets for people making over $1 million a year. Expands the earned income tax credit and child care credit. Eliminates the ability of U.S. corporations to defer taxes on offshore profits. All these are the opposite of things that the Republicans are doing. So anyhow, I'm just giving you a heads up, an FYI. Tomorrow, I believe. Is today Thursday? Yeah, today's Thursday. So we're trying to get somebody from the House Progressive Caucus on to drop by tomorrow and give you, a whole lot more detail on this. So, but anyway, Bob in San Luis Obispo, California. Hey, Bob, you want to talk about the Israeli elections?
Yes, Tom. The one analogy I'd like to point out is how you have the situation in Israel has really been exacerbated by the extreme right-wing tilt of the leadership in the government, right, and the apartheid situation for the Palestinians in the area. And when you see a foreign person to Israel coming in, investing in their media and supporting the far right-wing candidate, is kind of like how Fox News was so supportive of President Bush back in 2004.
Right.
And I really think that as ugly as the situation looks to most of the world in Israel, I think that's how the world viewed America back in 2004 also.
Oh, I think you're absolutely right. And you know, what's going on here is Shelley Adelson is, you know, this American billionaire is trying to launder money out of Macau, or is trying to get his money out of Macau. He's got these casinos off the coast of China in Chinese-controlled territory. He's trying to take that Chinese money and bring it back into the United States and not pay income taxes on it. And the Democrats back 4 or 5 years ago tightened up the rules on offshoring money and would thus increase the taxes on the Koch brothers and Shelley Adelson. And Adelson is hell-bent for leather to go after this. And I think, frankly, part of that is supporting Netanyahu and Israel. It's kind of a backdoor way of controlling the U.S. government through Bibi Netanyahu, because Netanyahu can control the Republican Party in the United States.
Yes, he can. And I'm just wondering if Israel has taken its far right swing as far as it's going to go, or maybe they're almost at the apex, and we'll start to swing back to the left.
Here's why I think not, Bob. I think not, because Netanyahu has done the same thing Bush did. I referenced this in my rant from the last half hour, but I should have gone into more detail. You take a situation which is not great and you make it a whole lot worse, right? Like what we did to the lives of ordinary people in Afghanistan and Iraq, and what Netanyahu has done to the lives of Gazans and people on the West Bank in Israel. You make it a whole lot worse with a lot of institutional stuff, with big stuff that the average person can't go against, like, you know, us going into Iraq and firing every single government employee who was a Ba'ath Party member, which was virtually every government employee, and, you know, totally turning a society upside down on its head. Now, Bibi Netanyahu has done something very similar to that to Palestinian society in Gaza and the West Bank. And so he has created a situation where there is so much blowback against him. I think probably the best parallel to this, or the best parallels, are South Africa and the United States 150 years ago. That you've got, you know, even if the country comes out of that apartheid, and even if it says, okay, we're going to make it right for the people that we've been oppressing all these years, it still takes a long time for that to catch up. We're still catching up in the United States. African Americans are still very much in catch-up mode. We're only really a generation out from the long, loud echoes of slavery, and not even a generation. I mean, it's still here. Go ahead.
I was going to say, so even though a majority, well, possibly a majority of Israeli citizens may view the Palestinians and the Gazans as, you know, more humane and not all terrorists, there's still that institutionalized racism and apartheid that's inside the Israeli.
Bob, when I said that it's time to call Israel an apartheid state, it's not that different from South Africa under P.W. Botha. You'll recall Israel was the one country that was actually thinking of selling nuclear weapons to South Africa back when it was an apartheid state. Ronald Reagan supported South Africa as an apartheid state and was very opposed to Nelson Mandela and all this stuff. But here's, apropos of that, listen to these. This is from the Association for Civil Rights in Israel, the ACRI. They are the Israeli kind of local variation of the ACLU. There's no association between the two, but they do the same kind of stuff as the American Civil Liberties Union. And in 2007, and I'm getting this from a piece in Alternate by Zed Jelani, titled "The Results Are In, Israel is an Authoritarian State, We Can No Longer Deny It." I think he also posted this over at thinkprogress.org. He says, in 2007, they polled Israelis on racial attitudes. They found that 50% of Israeli Jews say they would never live in the same house as an Arab or allow their children to befriend Arabs. In 2010, they did a follow-up, and they found that 50% is now 56% of Israeli high schools favor barring Arabs from the parliament, from the Knesset. And among religious Israelis, that number rose to 82%. And, you know, again, when they had the war this last summer in Gaza, I mean, that's the kind of thing that Netanyahu will do, because it causes people to fall in line, his people to fall in line again, you know, in favor of him and against the Gazans. Polls from reputable outlets found that somewhere between 86% and 95% of Israelis supported the bombing of Gaza, whereas only 3 to 4% of Israelis believed the Israeli military used excessive force. That, as Zed Jelani points out, those are not the kind of polling numbers you get out of a functional democracy. Those are the kind of polling numbers you get out of an authoritarian regime. And I would say that is, under Netanyahu, that is what Israel has become, and we should start treating them as if they are. Make sense, Bob?
And do you think if the Palestinians went forth with a more of a Gandhian attitude of, you know, look, we're being oppressed, and we're not going to fight this now. We're just going to let the world see what Israel's doing to
right.
us.
I have been
I was going to say, I understand there's a mindset, perhaps, in the minds of the male-dominated society in the Middle East,
right,
where they feel they need to stand up and fight.
Yep.
But if they were to take the cue from Gandhi and Martin Luther King and, you know, react in a more nonviolent approach, perhaps they can get the world more on their side.
I agree. And for 11 years on this program and in writings before that, I have been saying I think both the Israelis and the Palestinians have blown this. And I think Yasser Arafat blew it really big time. And because he was, you know, he had these two constituencies. You know, he had the people who actually wanted peace no matter what it took, even if it meant being peaceful. And then he had the people who, you know, last week, last month, last year had a member of their family killed by Israel or by Israel policies. And they're just not ready or willing to hear talk about, oh, let's go stand in the streets and chant kumbaya and let the police fire rubber bullets at us. And that's why I don't think that either side is going to get this consensus for peace that they really need. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that Netanyahu has been just amping up the racism and particularly, I mean, the morning of the election. Oh, my God, the Arabs are coming out to vote against me. You got to come out and help me stop the Arabs. Right. I mean, you know, we've got a racist authoritarian who is running one of our most consequential allies in the world. And we have been defending that ally against all kinds of stuff. And frankly, the Palestinians keep coming to the UN saying, we would like to be a state. We would like to be able to, for example, charge Israel with crimes against humanity in the International Criminal Court. Or we would like to just be able to do normal stuff that states do. And who vetoes every effort to do that? The United States. Now, that does not require Congress. That's something the president can do on his own. He can simply advise his ambassador to the United Nations, stop vetoing those. They aren't even anti-Israel resolutions. They're pro-Palestinian resolutions. Stop vetoing the stuff that supports the Palestinians. And let's let Israel just fight this battle on their own rather than with us. And I think that that would have tremendous power and consequence. And as Tom Friedman points out, it's a whole new world with regard to this. Bob, thank you for the call. There's also, you know, in saying to the Palestinians, why don't you just stand there and let them shoot at you, there's also a certain amount of, you know, Martin Luther King could say that to his people. I can't.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
A member of the oppressor class, as it were, should not say to the oppressed class, just take it. It'll get you what you want. It doesn't, it's not believed. And welcome back. Keith, watching Free Speech TV in Ann Arbor, Michigan. My old stomping grounds. How you doing, Keith?
I'm doing fine, Tom. First of all, I wanted to start out, I am going to say something about Israel, but I wanted to let you know how much Free Speech TV is important to me because of the fact that you guys preach facts and you don't preach fear. Mm. And with that, I wanted to tell you that I'm telling everybody that I know to support you guys at Free Speech TV.
Thank you.
Okay, no problem, man. And you know, I'm a two-time veteran. I was in the Marine Corps first and Army second. And from what I've been seeing with Israel, with the disrespect that Netanyahu has shown the president,
mm-hmm.
with the bigotry towards the Palestinian people, and the lies to his electorate, I just don't feel safe paying our tax dollars and giving support to an apartheid country.
Yeah. Well, This is, Keith, where instead of just calling the White House and saying stop vetoing pro-Palestinian resolutions in the UN, it might be useful to call your members of Congress, call the Congressional Switchboard 202-225-3121. The Republicans in the House and the Senate have both put out budgets this week, and part of those budgets is going to be $3 billion in foreign aid to Israel. Maybe it's time to say to members of Congress, let's have an actual debate on the floor of Congress about this money for Israel.
Oh, yeah, because I agree wholeheartedly. You know, Israel is not the same country it was back in the 60s, in the 70s, not even in the early 80s.
Yep.
This country has shifted too far to the right for my taste.
I agree.
I just, you know, I believe that, you know, we should, you know, not support Netanyahu until that government changes. Then we should, you know, go ahead and start trying to negotiate, you know, for a peace settlement over there.
Yeah, all those old chestnuts, you know, Keith, like, Israel's the only democracy in the region. I don't think it's a democracy anymore. I think it's been captured by Shelley Adelson. I think it's a Republicanocracy or something like that. You know, it's you've got this International Republican Party now that is Netanyahu in Israel and, you know, Boehner in the U.S.
Yeah, well, Tom, I just wanted to voice that. And you guys keep up the great work, man. I watch you every day. And if I can't watch you, I listen to you.
Well, so, thank you, Keith.
You know, no problem, man. You have a great day, and please keep preaching.
Okay, you got it. Thanks for your kind words, and thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Erica, in Gulfport, Mississippi. Hey, Erica. Koch brothers? Yes, no, maybe? Apparently not. Okay, Erica is probably watching her TV instead of listening to her phone. So let me just encapsulate this one more time, because there's not quite enough time to put another caller on the phone on before the break. You have right-wingers, a right-winger in the United States who's offended because the government wants to tax his money coming from China into the U.S. So he funds a newspaper in Israel, a free newspaper, which becomes the nation's largest newspaper, to support Bibi Netanyahu and other right-wingers so that they will influence the Republican Party in the United States to cut this guy's taxes? Really? I mean, when it comes down to that, you look at this and go, this is a democracy? Really? We'll be back. Minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. Yeah, back in the mid-2000s, Jimmy Carter wrote a book called Peace, Not Apartheid. And when we started this show, we should have started creating archives of clips, because I would love to say, Shane, can you pull up that Carter interview from 2006? And God only knows where it is. I am so disorganized. What can I say? Wayne in Chicago. Hey, Wayne, what's on your mind today?
Hey, Tom, how are you?
I'm great. How are you, Wayne?
Okay, yes. I want to talk about Israel, but first I want to just quickly talk about what you were talking about yesterday with Andrew Jackson. Put up myself, and the reason why we went into a depression was because, first of all, he eliminated the Second Bank of America, and then the states were printing all that money. And then as a counterweight to the states printing all that money, he tried to use silver and gold as a counterweight, and that's what caused the depression, not him paying off the national debt. That's what I wanted to say about yesterday, your analysis about what happened as far as the depression of Panic 1837.
Okay. I found a really interesting piece on NPR, actually. They had done a segment on that. And if you Google Andrew Jackson paying off the debt and put NPR into that, it'll come up, in which this particular historian was saying that, yeah, his paying off the debt was one of the big things that led to that worst depression in American history. Whether the guy was right or not, I can't say. I'm not a historian of that era, but.
Well, I looked at NPR, piece that you're talking about, and that's what he was stressing, that it wasn't because he paid off the debt. It was because the states printed all that money, and he all of a sudden used silver and gold as a counterweight to try to slow the land speculation down because of the real estate bubble,
right.
And that's what caused the depression,
not
the fact that he paid off the national debt. But anyway, okay. I want to get back to Israel.
Sure.
The way Netanyahu won that race was three main weapons: fear, racism, and apartheid.
Yep.
I even saw an Israeli woman on TV saying, well, we got to vote for Netanyahu or else the Arabs are going to take over.
Right.
You got Israeli politicians on TV pleading with the Israeli population to stop it with the racism. So the Israelis are at the height of their racism right now, and they have become what they hated the most from the Nazis, that's what they have become. And I'm going to make a prediction. Within the next 5 years, because that's how long a prime minister's term lasts in Israel. Within the next 5 years, he's going to take them to war with Iran. Within the next 5 years, that's my prediction.
Boy, I hope you're wrong.
Thank you.
I so hope you're wrong. But it wouldn't surprise me at all. I so hope you're wrong. Wayne, thank you for the call. Spot on. Chris in Plano, Texas. Hey, Chris, what's up?
Hey, listen, first of all, I'm so happy to speak with you. I've been trying for a while, which is a good thing, because I just want you to, your program to be healthy and grow.
Thank you, Chris. Yeah.
Yeah, hey, real quick, you're one of the most intelligent people. I have to get that out there since over time I have talked to you.
Thanks, Chris.
Since I've ever talked to at all. Anyway, real quick, I want to piggyback somewhat on the guy that was just on. the danger, what is happening in that, Benji, I'm going to call him Benji, okay?
Mm-hmm.
What is happening to Benji is he's been emboldened by the Republican Party. Benji never would have made the statement that he's now not in favor of a two-state solution, but a one-state, if it had not been for he has been given tacit approval to say that by the Republican Party in the United States.
And Sheldon
Adelson.
They
have told him, in my opinion, that they have his back.
Yeah.
This is why he could come to the Congress. This is why this man could spew off those racist, say, if there was someone to the Republican Party in this country, attitude at his election. But here's the big thing, though, real quick, is the military-industrial complex is pushing this thing of war. They don't want the Iran talks to succeed. If the Iran talks succeed, that Obama's trying to do, then there's less likelihood that we will go to war. But to feed the beast, they need a war. And I'm mighty afraid, on the like the last caller, he will not only will he attack Iran. Here's the deal. If the talks fail, Israel has an excuse now to attack Iran. The U.S. now, because of you know our relationship with Israel and the Israelis and the Jews that live in this country, are not going to stand by and let Iran Israel go to war and the United States not support them.
Right.
I'm telling you, this thing is being set up. The presidency also is being set up. So this thing is military driven. If you want to know why we went to Iraq for the money. Always follow the money.
Yeah.
And I think the military industrial complex is behind all of this stuff. But we're about to be dragged into a war, and Obama knows it.
I think you're right, Chris. I think you're right. And what we're looking at is, Netanyahu is so craven, and he now knows that the Republican Party of the United States helped him become prime minister by inviting him to come over here and give a speech, and he used that in his TV ads and whatnot. So the question in Netanyahu's mind a year and a half from now is going to be, what can he do that will help the Republican nominee for president, whether it's Jeb Bush or Scott Walker, what can he use to help that guy get elected president? And I think going back to Wayne's prediction, whether he would bomb Iran or not, I don't know. I think that's been dirtied up a little bit. But his going after the Gazans makes perfect sense. You know, another massive bombing of Gaza in early November, late October, early November of 2016. Perfect sense.
I think he's going to be pushed to bomb Iran. He has to. That's the whole point. They're going after Iran to pull the U.S. into it, and the U.S. then has to follow. That's the big danger.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you, Tom. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Chris. Thanks for the call and thanks for your thoughts. I think both you and Wayne and pretty much everybody else who's been calling, we have a really legitimate reason to be concerned here in the United States.
Excuse me,
I don't know if that sneeze went on the air, but we have a really legitimate reason to be concerned and to do something about it. And that is to say enough of this Warhawk stuff, you know, whether it's Shelley Adelson, you know, Warhawking the Republican Party and Netanyahu, whether it's Netanyahu Warhawking the United States, John McCain, bomb Iran, enough of the Warhawk stuff. We need to dial this back a little bit. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com. Total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com. Your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. And Ona Porter is on the line with us, the president and CEO of Prosperity Works out there in New Mexico, in Albuquerque. Right, Ona?
You know, Tom, good morning. I'm calling actually from the State House today.
Oh, great. Okay. So tell it. Boy, I'm getting a funky feedback in my. Oh, I see. Ona, we need you to pick up your phone. If you can, and just, and talk to me on the phone so that your phone audio is the audio that we use, if you could please
Is that better?
And, yeah, that's a world better. So, Ona, tell me about what's going on in New Mexico.
Well, Tom, we're about 2.5 days away from the end of our legislative session. We are kind of a rare commodity in the nation where we alternate between 30- and 60-day sessions from year to year. And we have an unpaid legislature, and we have a lot of difficulty really influencing our legislators, one, because of the system that they are unpaid volunteer legislators with no staff who are incredibly susceptible then to lobbyists. And the other is, really the role of money in politics as a result of that. And we've been working, since before this legislative session on capping predatory lending rates in our state. We're one of the few states that does not have a usury rate. And so have been working really hard to put a 36% cap rate on all storefront lending.
I remember when the usury rate in the United States was, I think, 12%. Richard Nixon did away with it, that nobody could charge more than 12%. It was against the law. It was against federal law, and he had to do away with that because of the inflation back in the 70s?
That's right. That's right. And there was no consideration at that point for what happens to a usury rate during inflation, and that's one of the excuses that was used to do away with it entirely.
Right. Usury being the biblical crime of charging too much interest, or actually any interest. According to the Bible, if you're lending to your own people, you should not be charging any interest. And that's how, for example, Muslim banking is done in most of the world. They charge fees rather than interest.
Right. And here we have a combination of fees and interest in storefront lending that averages close to 400%. But we have seen, and our Supreme Court decision struck down one case, which was over 1,000%.
Wow. 1,000% interest?
Interest.
Wow.
That's correct.
So presumably if these companies can get away with gouging people in New Mexico to the tune of 1,000% interest, they are making enough money that they can make life very difficult for you when you come in and say, hey, let's put in a cap, an interest cap of 36%.
Well, that's precisely right. And one of the things that is implied in your statement, Tom, is that people are coming into our state to do this.
Mm.
We're kind of the patsies. And in fact, 80% of all of the companies operating in New Mexico and ripping out more than $110 million from the poorest people in our state and the poorest communities are, in fact, out-of-state companies.
Wow. What state are they mostly chartered in, or do you know?
You know, it varies, but I know that Georgia is one of those that is has big influence in New Mexico.
Wow. So in New Mexico, working people, poor people are being absolutely screwed by the banksters, by these payday loan banksters, hijacking our democracy. We're talking with Ona Porter, the president and CEO of Prosperity Works, the website Prosperity Works, WORKS.net. And what can people do who are watching or listening right now? What can they do to help you out?
Well, you know, it really has been an incredible call to action that we have undertaken in New Mexico. And in addition to the website that you just mentioned, Tom, we have one that is called loansharkattack.com, which lists all of the 24 lobbyists that are working on this, some of the highest paid people in our state, and also all the facts about predatory lending and who's operating it and where they're operating, and the incredible list of people who have joined us. There have been 12 municipalities or county commissions that have passed resolutions to end predatory lending in our state. And they have passed that because local jurisdictions have no authority to set rates. Mm-hmm. So they have also been joined by over 260 clergy people across our state and 50 organizations. And yet our bills, which were intending to cap all rates at 36%, did not make it out of any committee. They were tabled the first hearing.
That's
as
incredible.
Opposed to some industry bills, which I ran from Albuquerque up here to get on the show today because they may go to the Senate floor for passage today.
So the Republicans in New Mexico who control the legislature there are saying no to protecting working people and poor people in the state from predatory lenders. But they're saying yes to giving more tax breaks and government help to rich people and big corporations. Is that what you're saying?
Well that really is what's going on. There's no question about it.
This really proves my argument that there's only two kinds of people in the Republican Party. There's rich people and there's suckers. And arguably there's a third category, and that's the professional hustlers who make a living doing what the rich people want them to do, which might be the definition of most of your New Mexico legislators.
Well, that certainly could be at this point. And one of the things that we know as the Republicans took over the House of Representatives is we have, in fact, six committee chairs who are ALEC members. So, you know, we can look at what agenda will be passed and what won't be passed.
And it'll
protection
all
is not on that agenda.
And it'll all come out of the Koch brothers funded American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC.
That's right. That's exactly what's happening.
Amazing. So if people want to help you stop this, what can they do?
Well, they need to call their senators today and say that they need to push back, that they need to consider consumers over these outrageous profits.
So are you talking about they need to call their New Mexico senators or they need to call their U.S. senators?
New Mexico senators.
Okay, so our listeners and viewers listening or watching in New Mexico need to call your state senators and say,
correct.
You know, get with the program here. Let's protect our citizens from abusive lending practices. Right.
Yes, and not only what they need to say is do not pass the industry bill. We need a 36% cap rate, period,
right.
Across the board. What we've experienced in the past, Tom, in 2007, we actually did some controls on payday lending in our state. And the industry, in about three hot seconds, you know, really morphed their products to meet a new standard. And now what used to be about 70% of all the loans made as payday loans has now shifted. That's only about 12%. And so other kinds of loans have emerged that are 31 days in length and so on.
Yeah. So it's sort of like when the mergers and acquisition artists, the M&A artists, when that became a tarnished brand, they changed their names to private equity guys. It's this,
right.
The same thing is happening with these hardcore right wingers and the banks that want to exploit people. When one of their products gets a bad name, they just come up with a new name for it.
Well, that really is what happens, or new terms.
Yeah.
And the reason we have called to action around the 36% rate, it's a flat rate. It is easily monitored. It is anyone who made a loan in New Mexico above that rate, it would be unenforceable. There's no bureaucracy that gets added to this process. It's clear, and it can't get it to be gotten around.
Sounds great. For more information, go to prosperityworks.net, and you can get more information. Ona, what was the other website?
It's loansharkattack.com.
Loansharkattack.com. Thank you, Ona Porter. Thank you.
Thank you,
this
Tom.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We will be back with more from Tel Aviv to Turtle Bay right after this. Welcome back. 15 minutes past the hour. And Erica, watching Free Speech TV in Gulfport, Mississippi on DirecTV. Hey, Erica, what's on your mind today?
Oh, a lot of things are on my mind. Number one, climate change.
Yeah.
The Koch brothers and Israel. Let's do the Koch brothers.
Okay.
They are how old now? They're not going to live forever.
Right, they're in their 70s, I believe.
Yeah, so am I.
Mm-hmm.
So what's going to happen when they, you know, when they die?
Well, I'm guessing there'll be another generation of right-wing billionaires to replace them. It'll probably be some guys who made their fortune in the tech industry and who think of themselves as libertarians. But
you know as well as I do, things go from one extreme to the other.
Yeah, to paraphrase Jesus, the rich you will always have with you. It's not like they're going to go away, even if a particular generation of the rich dies off.
Heaven, you know, like trying to get a camel through the eye of a needle or something.
There you go.
But anyway, on climate change,
mm-hmm.
I lived in Alaska 26 years.
Mm-hmm.
And during the oil spill on Good Friday, 1989, and the Koch brothers and their fossil fuel investments they make,
mm-hmm.
Something really has to be done. But
well, that was ExxonMobil, wasn't it? That was the Exxon Valdez.
It was a tanker.
Right.
They're still cleaning it up.
Yeah, the Exxon Valdez.
Exxon Valdez, where the oil met the seas.
Yep. Very good one, Eric.
But, on the Koch brothers in Israel, I lived there for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
It certainly has changed. But anyway,
when did you live there?
Koch brothers are in their 70s also.
When were you living in Israel?
78 through 82, we were building the bases in the Negev.
Mm-hmm. That's about the same time that Louise and I first started visiting Israel on a real regular basis.
Gosh, how did I miss you?
Yeah, I don't know.
What is your birthday?
We may have run into each other. Say what?
What is your birthday?
May 7th.
You're a Taurus?
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. The Earth people.
What can I say? What can I say? So, what took you to Israel, Erica?
Huh?
What caused you to move to Israel?
I immigrated.
Wow.
The law of return.
Yeah, yeah.
And probably one of the first female ambulance drivers they had.
Oh.
And now I see they have a lot of them, so women have come a long way.
Oh, yeah. Israel's been very good to its women.
Yeah.
Not so good to the Palestinians.
Well, I mean, it was a battle, too, you know, because if they did not really consider female drivers at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And now I see they have a lot of them, so I'm really happy with that. So.
Yeah, yeah. We'll see where all this goes. Erica, thank you for the call, and thanks for watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. I appreciate it. We'll be back. It's 20 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. 20 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. And Russell in Hickory Hills, Illinois. There was a woman who was at a Rick Santorum event and stood up and said that President Obama was a socialist, communist, whatever, and Santorum didn't quite disagree with her. You wanted to talk about that, Russell?
Yes. You know, it's like he's an animal, the president. Drag him out of the White House and shoot him. I mean, and him standing there saying, yeah, why are you in the Senate, so why are you telling me? But I agree with everything you say. We should drag that guy out. And then he went on to say he's going to nuke South Carolina. Now, talk about a sucker.
Yeah.
He's going to nuke South Carolina. You already got that done with the governor you got with Nikki Haley.
Well, this, you know, it reinforces my position, and I think that we need to try and turn this into a national meme, that the Republican Party has basically three kinds of people in the Republican Party. There are the rich people, there are the people who work for the rich people, and there are the suckers. And that's it. And and Rick Santorum is out trolling for suckers. That's what he does for a living. Russell, thank you for the call. Jared in Burlington, Vermont, you wanted to talk about Israel? Jared? No, Jared. Okay. Matthew in Springfield, Virginia. Hey, Matthew, what's on your mind?
I also would like to talk about Israel, Tom.
Go for it.
I think I want to stick up for him today.
Okay.
Okay. You know, it's a secular democracy with a noisy, violent, right-wing party that's heavily religiousified, kind of like this country.
And supported by a small billionaire class, yes.
Yes. So at least we're familiar.
Yeah.
The second thing is, you know, we reacted to the modicum of danger presented by the American Indian with obscene violence and wiped them out. I hesitate to think what Americans would have done in Israel's shoes. So I think that they've reacted, the Israelis have reacted with, I think, to the best of their abilities, proportionate response to their threats.
Yeah, I respectfully disagree. I would say that they should have been able to see that an apartheid regime ultimately is going to confront a crisis. And 20, 30, 40 years ago, the leaders of Israel and the Palestinians should have been sitting down with Jordan and Syria and the other countries in the region and working out the details for a two-state solution. They've refused to do that. Netanyahu is not going to do that in the future, mark my words. And, Israel's a secular democracy. But there are a number of secular democracies around the world. Does that mean that we have to give them $3 billion?
No. And I agree with you. But the last problem I have with this attitude is that I think it's the conscious ploy by the Republican Party to have away votes from the Democrats.
Oh, of course.
To create...
The Republicans are using Israel to boost Republican fortunes here in the United States, and Likud, the Republicans of Israel, are using the United States to boost their electoral returns and, frankly, their profits in Israel. And this is what I said in the last hour, that we've seen basically a version of the Republican Party take over both the United States and Israel, and it's really ugly. And the Republican Party in the United States, they're all about apartheid. You know, we want to build this 30-foot fence down on the southern border and turn Mexico into East Berlin. And, you know, tell me that's not apartheid. And people of color, don't bother coming to vote. And it's just, you know, the Republican Party is all about apartheid here in the United States. And the Likud Party in Israel is all about apartheid there. Only it's, you know, Palestinians instead of black people. But it's, you know, I don't see the difference.
Okay. I concede.
Yeah. Okay. Matthew, thanks for the call. I'm not trying to win an argument here. It saddens me tremendously. I mean, when I first went to Israel in 78 or 79, I was astonished. And I've been there many, many times. Louise and I helped Hal and Shelley Cohen start what is now the largest child caring program in the entire country of Israel, Or Shalom. We have spent a lot of time there. And you say this to your friends, not your enemies. Get your act together. Miriam in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hey, Miriam, you wanted to chime in on Ona Porter's comments about payday lending?
Yes, it's good to talk to you, Tom. I think New Mexico is a perfect example of how money and politics is creating an environment where constituent needs and wants don't even get heard.
Right.
Lobbyists are buying legislators, and the industry is buying the lobbyists.
Yep.
And by virtue of that, even though the huge percentage of people in Albuquerque, New Mexico in general, support a 36% cap rate, those bills are not even getting to the floor.
Right. And this is another sign of why how the Republican Party works, that they represent the rich and powerful. And like I said, the Republican Party has three kinds of people in it, the rich and powerful, the people who work for them, and suckers. And the suckers, the Republican suckers in New Mexico, are sitting around apparently oblivious to what their party is doing as it prepares to rip them off again. It's just astonishing. Miriam, thank you for the call. Sally in Rancho Cucamonga, California. Hey, Sally, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Just a quick comment, a question. I'd like to encourage everybody to stop using banks, take their money out of banks, and put them in credit unions.
Yeah, I agree.
I mean, they don't charge. I mean, I think the banks start to feel all that, and then until we can get public banking, this would be one way to, you know.
Yeah, I was promoting that back 5 years ago or so when I was still in Portland. We went on this whole campaign of move your money out of banks, the big banks, and into your local credit union. I did it in Portland.
Yep.
And then Absolutely. Very Arianna Huffington started promoting it on Huffington Post. Not my idea, but, you know, presenting it, this idea. And a lot of people, got on board with it. I still think it's a good idea just because I think the big banks are not safe places to have your money. Sally, thank you for the call. Thanks for listening to Sirius and Rancho Cucamonga. And thanks for your brilliant comments. Everybody should think twice if they've got their money, and particularly in one of the six or seven big U.S. banks, the too big to jail banks. Those are really too big to keep your money in banks. We'll be back with your calls right after this.
Tom's newest book is The Crash of 2016, now out in paperback. Somebody today will get a free copy when they call into the show.
More right after this, 28 minutes past the hour. The very, very multanimously ugly, the good, Tick Siegerblum, the Democratic Nevada state representative, or senator, excuse me, just put forward a proposal that would give pets, yes, pets, access to medical marijuana. Siegerblum's plan is part of a bill to change Nevada's medical marijuana laws, and while there's no proof the pot works as a painkiller for pets, one has to assume that at least some of the same effects will happen to pets as do on humans. There's still a long way to go before this proposal becomes law, but as a pet owner, I gotta say I hope it passes. I would like some more science, though. The bad. Brendan Fisher. During his radio show Monday, the former American Family Association analyst tried to argue that discriminating against homosexuality was not the same as discriminating against gay people. Really? Check it out.
So, ladies and gentlemen, we have got to understand. I mean, this maybe is the place to begin. Not all kinds of discrimination are bad. Some forms of discrimination against sexually immoral behavior is good. I'm not talking about discrimination against people here. Not even talking about discrimination against people based on their sexual orientation. It's based on their behavior.
Right. I think it's safe to say that when your first line of your argument is not all kinds of discrimination are bad, you've already failed to make whatever point you're trying to make. And the very, very ugly Kappa Delta Rho. The Pennsylvania state chapter of that fraternity was suspended Tuesday after a police investigation found that they were operating a private Facebook page that violated all standards of consent. Check it out.
State College police say a tip came in informing them of two private Facebook pages created and run by members of the Kappa Delta Rho fraternity. According to the search warrant, the first page covered business transactions was shut down after a victim allegedly discovered it. But according to the search warrant, a second page titled 2.0 was made in its place. Police say this is where members allegedly shared photos of drug sales, hazing, and photos of unsuspecting victims, mostly women, partially naked.
Right. The Delta Kappa Rho, or the Kappa Delta Rho brothers, are going to be lucky if suspension is all they get. That is insanely ugly. Welcome back. The PCCC, the Progressive Change Committee, has Adam Green, the co-founder, Progressive Change Campaign Committee, excuse me. He's talking about the People's Budget. This is the Progressive Caucus, the House Republican Progressive, or the Democratic Progressive Caucus. They put together a budget, and here are some of the things that it does. Now, what the PCCC did is they did polling on this budget. Now, you would think that something that more than half of Americans believe or support would be something worthy of coverage on CNN, MSNBC, ABC, NBC, CBS, The Wall Street Journal, The New York Times, The Wall Street Journal. You know, more than half of Americans are in favor of this, and it's being proposed by the largest or second largest caucus in the entire United States Congress. You would think that would be news. But you're not going to see this covered because it's the Progressive Caucus. It's not the Republicans. It's not. I mean, last year when the Republicans came up with their budget and it was a joke and it was dead on arrival, the press covered the Republican and Democrats came up. The Progressive Caucus came up with a budget and you know, which really didn't have much of a chance of passing, but not because it wasn't supported by the American people, but because it wasn't supported by the oligarchs. And last year and the year before that and the 4 years before that, every time this happened, the press reported on the Republican budget saying that because the Republicans didn't control Congress and their budget had no chance of passing, that we, the press, need to tell you all about it so that you know what you missed out on. Now that the progressive budget has basically no chance of passing because Republicans control the House and Senate, the corporate media in America is saying, we're not going to bother telling you about the Progressive Caucus budget this time either, only this time we're not going to do it because it has no chance of passing. Wait a minute, didn't you tell us that about the Republican budget last time and the 5 years before that every year as an excuse to tell us all about the Republican budget and tell us nothing about the progressive budget?
Well, yeah, we did that, but that's just life.
Okay. 71% of Americans, 56% of Republicans, 93% of Democrats, 61% of independents, 71% overall of Americans support this statement to provide federal assistance, financial assistance to states to make public colleges and universities more affordable so that all students have access to debt-free college education in the United States. 71% of Americans support that. The majority of Democrats, Republicans, and independents all support that. You will hear, and that's in the progressive budget. You will not hear one word about this in the national media. 71% of Americans support this statement. Invest $400 billion a year in major new jobs program that would create 4 million jobs by making long-term investments in building our transportation infrastructure, expanding internet access to rural areas, and increasing access to clean, renewable energy. 71% of Americans support that. 91% of Democrats, 55% of Republicans, 61% of independents. This is a majority of Americans, even Republicans, support putting $400 billion a year into an infrastructure bill or a project that would create 4 million new jobs, eliminate unemployment. Is that going to be covered by the media? I mean, we know the Republicans are not going to vote for this because, A, it's the best thing for America, and, B, it would make them very, you know, it would make the Democrats popular. It just ain't going to happen. Even though the billionaires could figure out a way to get a major chunk of that $400 billion. Okay, here's another one. 59% of Americans support this. 71% of Democrats, 53% of Republicans, 50% of independents. Again, more than half, 59% of all Americans are in favor of, quote, raising the tax rate on personal income above $1 million a year, which is currently just below 40%, so that income above $1 million is taxed at 50%, the same rate it was taxed under President Reagan. 59% of Americans say, yes, do that. You are not even going to, not only is that not going to be a piece of legislation, you're not even going to hear the debate in the corrupt corporate media in the United States. You're not even going to hear the debate. On right-wing hate radio, you're going to hear not one word about the progressive budget, because God forbid that the suckers in the Republican Party, the people who vote for Republicans but who are not rich, God forbid the suckers could figure out that there's an alternative to the Republican Party. That the progressive Democrats actually submitted a balanced budget that works. It just doesn't work for the Koch brothers. Here's another one. 77% of Americans support this. 94% of Democrats, 63% of Republicans, 69% of independents, 77% overall, more than half of Americans, ensure that high-quality pre-kindergarten programs are available to every child in America. 77% of Americans support that. The Republicans will not allow it to happen, and the media will not allow you to know that the second largest or the largest caucus, I'm not sure which is which. I think the Black caucus is a little larger than the Progressive caucus. I might be wrong. They go back and forth. But the Progressive caucus in the House of Representatives, the largest caucus in Congress, proposes a budget, and it gets no coverage in the media. At that point, you have to say, what the hell is wrong with our media? And I can tell you, it's very simple. Our media has been corrupted, just like our politics have been corrupted by the same thing, rich people. Which is not a Jeremiah against rich people. There's a lot of good rich people out there. But the problem is that our Supreme Court has changed the rules of the game repeatedly now over the last 40 years so that rich people now have more political influence than they ever had before. So that two rich brothers, the second richest family in the United States behind the Waltons, is the Koch family, two rich brothers can raise more money than the Democratic or Republican Party spent last year. They've got a nationwide setup already. They already have workers on the ground. You see Scott Walker coming into a state and all of a sudden he's a rock star. That doesn't happen just in a vacuum. And it's not because Scott Walker is such a brilliant guy. It's because the Koch brothers have a machine, and it's Americans for Prosperity. They've got chapters in every single state. They have enormous funding. They can deploy, you know, dozens of $300,000 fancy buses for Tea Party events. I mean, they can do all kinds of stuff to just, you know, run the political table, as it were. And there is no consequence to them for this. If anything, they get more out of it. I mean, they're making more money. The more that they can get, the more that the Koch brothers and the Adelsons of the world, the more that they can get Republicans indebted to them so that the Republicans do what they want. Like saying, oh, there's no such thing as global climate change. When literally you've got villages in Alaska melting, having to be relocated. Because the permafrost that they've been on for 6,000 years just melted. But there's no climate change. Largest cyclone in the history of the world. There's no climate change. East and West Antarctica starting to melt into the seas because the seas underneath are so much warmer than anybody expected. And if they go fast, we could see, you know, 10, 20 feet of sea level rise. Oh, there's no climate change. Why? So let the Koch brothers keep making a profit. Let ExxonMobil and Rex Tillerson keep making their profit. We'll continue to pay for it. We the people. We'll continue to pay their externalities. We'll pay for the cause of the cancers everything from fracking to burning gasoline causes. We'll continue to defend the Middle East and their oil pipelines. We'll make them rich. Right.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
At what point do Americans stand up and say, okay, we got it. You know, these billionaires are running our political system. Enough. 15 minutes before the hour. Welcome back. John in Sparks, Nevada, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. Hey, John, what's up?
Well, Tom, great to talk to you. And I'd like to make an additional comment to a viewer you had a couple Fridays ago during Brunch with Bernie. Your first viewer calling in gave an excellent description of what a campaign for Bernie Sanders for president would do and why it should be. And I second that completely. I want to give a little historical analogy for that that I think can be useful.
Okay.
One time, we've had a two-party system for 200 years now or so.
Right.
And only one time in the history of that two-party system did a new party come on board and send one of the existing two parties into a place called oblivion, take their place, and go on to become one of the two major two parties.
Actually, it's happened twice. It happened in the 1820s with the Federalists.
In the 1850s.
Right, in the 1850s and the Democratic with the Whigs, and the Whigs replaced the Federalists in the 1820s.
Oh, the Whigs replaced the Federalists.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah,
George Washington
and John Adams were Federalists, and then the Democratic Republicans, you know, basically started stomping them. And by 1820, yeah. the Federalists were all but dead, and that's when the Whig Party rose up to
and
take their
the
place.
That's when the Whigs came along. Okay. Right. Thanks for the correction.
Sure.
Anyway.
No, but your point is well taken.
The 1850s, though, was when the Republicans replaced the Whigs.
Right. And the Republicans were actually a progressive movement at that time.
Were they ever? I recommend to my friends that they go to Google and read the 1856 Republican platform. It's an amazing document. They opposed slavery and polygamy. And among other things.
Yeah.
Okay. But the fact that in 1850 a new party, but that was the last time. There was one before. But the 1850s was the last time a new party came along and sent one of the existing two parties to oblivion.
Right.
Okay, and they did that very simply because during the 1850s, this country was approaching a crisis in American history. It's called the Civil War.
Yep.
And talk about an ineffective Congress. Boy, the 1850s would match pretty much what's going on today. So I say that and one of the important things for Bernie Sanders, it seems to me, is whether he can get elected or not. I don't care about that. So I'd like to see that. I'd love to see that. But if Bernie Sanders would run as an independent, I think we would be taking an important step toward creating a new party in this country.
Yeah,
and that is equally or more important than whether Bernie Sanders gets elected. A new independent party, and of course then, which of the existing two parties would be sent to oblivion? I think it would be the Republican Party if Bernie Sanders could lead the way to a new party.
Okay, John, a couple thoughts on that. Number one, Bernie's not going to do that. He's very clear that he's not going to do that. Number two, there already is a third political party in the United States that has considerable strength and considerable power. It's called Americans for Prosperity. The Koch brothers have funded it. It has more employees or a number of employees it's close to, or employees and volunteers, as the Republican Party. I mean, they have this ground strategy in every single state. They're very, very well funded. Americans for Prosperity is the Koch brothers' political arm. And whether that has the ability to replace the Republican Party or not, I don't know. But I would tell you that, you know, about half of these Republican Tea Party freshmen in the House and the Senate really are Americans for Prosperity senators, not Republican senators. So maybe it's moving in that direction. John, thank you for the call. We'll be back with Bob Ney. Minutes before you are. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you and Bob Ney with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com, brought to you by the goatsfortheoldgoat.com. Ellen is in South Sudan right now doing that work, and free-don.org. And Congressman, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Tom. How are you?
I am well. So what's in the news today?
We've got a few things. Something I wanted to talk about that you won't see in many places. You might have talked about it already. We hear about the Senate budget, which there is a war going on between the House Republicans and the Senate Republicans, and between the House Republicans and themselves. Kevin McCarthy, who's the number four guy from California for the Republicans in leadership, actually had to go over to the Budget Committee because everything came to a grinding halt. The bottom line of that fight, without going into what the budget does or doesn't do, but the bottom line of that fight is you have the conservative hawks who want to cut in the budget, and then you have the conservatives who want more military spending. Mm-hmm. And some of them might be willing to trade some increase in domestic spending, but that's yet to be seen. So the food fight, Tom, is right now within themselves versus with the White House.
And this is not for this symbolic budget that the Republicans rolled out yesterday or the day before that is, you know, general principles. This is for the details. Is that what we're talking about here now, Bob?
This is the generic basic building block plan.
I see.
But the crunch to this that's important is that if they can't agree now on something that really doesn't have the true weight of law, because there's no filibuster, the president doesn't veto it, what are they going to do when they get down to the actual detail work going through both chambers? And the reason I mention this is because not only is the budget important to Americans, of course, how it comes out, and you have the president's version, but also the fact that they're in control, the Republicans, and if they can't get this through the system, then it's not going to bode well for how they run the government. And I think it would probably help when we talk politics about the presidential election on the Democratic side in 2016. Mm-hmm. And the one thing I did want to mention, because it's not getting a lot of detail, but there is another budget. There's the president's budget. There's the Republican budget that's been unveiled. And then there's also the Congressional Progressive Caucus budget. And they gave great detail. It reduces the deficit of $4 trillion over the next decade. It also has 8.8 million job creation numbers in it by 2017. And it's very interesting, Tom, because it deals with infrastructure, creating long-term good jobs, and also it lays out how to pay for this in the sense of it brings more equality, fair tax equality to the middle class and, of course, to the upper brackets there'll be a tax adjustment there, and it's called fair individual taxes. So I looked at it today, and again, it's not getting much attention, but they did something of substance. It wasn't just complaining about the Republican budget. So
right.
I did want to mention
that. And not only that, the PCCC did some polling on this, and they found 71% of Americans support free public colleges, which is in the progressive budget. 70% of Americans support increasing Social Security benefits. 71% of Americans support the $400 billion Create 4 Million Jobs program for infrastructure. 59% of Americans, this is including 53% of Republicans, support raising the tax on personal income over $1 million a year. And 77% of Americans support ensuring pre-K to everybody in America. These are things that Americans, including Republicans, want. And it's just astonishing to me that none of them are going to become law. They're not even going to be considered for law because the oligarchs have such a lockdown hold on our political process.
Well, this, and it's great you raise or talking about this and raise this issue, because I've been calling shows today across the country, and this just it got zero attention. And when you look at it, it really has some fundamental programs in it that are acceptable by a lot of people: the public financing of campaigns, Social Security, as you mentioned. Senator Sanders, one of your callers mentioned him. He's been taking the lead talking about this, and also in the defense category, it does have a modernization of the defense posture to create substantial baseline defense spending. So it's not a budget that didn't have substance to it.
No, it's not. This is not frivolous. This is actually could be the budget of the United States of America. Unlike the Republican budget, which has a $1 trillion asterisk, where they say, yeah, we're going to raise an extra $1 trillion somehow by cutting spending.
Well, that's the other thing. And I was around budgets in the House when at least we actually did produce how we were going to do something.
Right.
It used to be the old-fashioned way to do it.
Right.
And in this budget, the Senate comes up with numbers, really good numbers, of additional money to the budget. They just don't tell you how they got there whatsoever in it. And, of course, it completely undoes the health care bill itself, which will never.
Yeah, it's just there's this magic asterisk. They say, okay, you know, Obamacare saves $1 trillion over the next decade, so we're going to keep that savings, but we're going to repeal Obamacare. How are you going to do that? Oh, we're not going to tell you.
And they won't tell you how to get the revenue increase.
Right.
So, but again, there's so much internal fighting on this. It's going to be fascinating to see how the Republicans handle getting this.
I agree. Bob, I have a quick question for you.
Yes.
Put your prognosticator hat on. The Republicans helped Bibi Netanyahu get elected. You know, they gave him an opportunity to create a campaign ad of him addressing Congress and all that kind of stuff.
That's right.
What is Netanyahu a year and a half from now, in October, November of 2016, what is Netanyahu going to do to help the Republicans out?
Well, that's an interesting question.
You think he's going to bomb Iran? Is he going to bomb Gaza? What's he going to do? I think he's going to do something.
He might make some type of threat out there. I mean, in order to get elected, he changed the dynamics. He really did. And the White House came out and I saw where Senator Rubio just attacked the president today, saying, "Well, the president's nicer, you know, because he hasn't called. He's nicer to the Iranians." Well, first of all, it's unconscionable that anybody in today's world would say that a certain portion of voters, that we have to put an alarm button out. That would be like a Caucasian person running for the United States Senate who says, "Oh, by the way, African Americans have just voted. What are we going to do about that?"
Right. Yeah. Get out and vote quick. There's black people voting against me.
Yeah. Israeli Arabs are voting. You know, this is look at what's going on. And the White House made a statement on it, and rightfully so. If the president hadn't said something on it, I don't care who it is, you can't disenfranchise groups of people and push alarm buttons because they're actually allowed to vote in a democracy.
Right.
And
the Republicans are all hysterical that Obama hasn't called Netanyahu yet to congratulate him. Ronald Reagan never called any Israeli prime minister to congratulate them on an election. Never.
That's right.
In 8
and
years.
And also, Bush 41 had a very tense relationship also with officials in Israel. So this isn't the first. And Rubio and people are trying to capitalize on this lack of phone call. Well, first of all, no one notified the president that the prime minister was coming, which is unprecedented in American history.
Right.
And so we have to remember that, too.
Yeah, it's all very bizarre. Bob Naik, Congressman, thanks for dropping by. Bob is the author of Sideswiped. You need to get this book and check it out if you want to learn how politics works in Washington, D.C. We'll be back with more of the Tom Hartman Program right after this.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.
Hey, friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman Program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com, providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Martise Johnson, this young man in Virginia, the University of Virginia, was just beaten bloody by the police. University of Virginia, there are protests happening all over the campus. It's growing. Terry McAuliffe, the Democratic governor of this traditionally kind of purple or Republican state, Virginia, is saying, I'm looking into this. The president of the university is, we're looking into this. It looks pretty bad. This young man, he was an African-American student. He was one of the leaders of the student political, movement, as it were, and was just trying to get into a bar. Bouncer pushed him back, and the cops took him to the ground and just beat the crap out of him. And you can see it. I mean, it's on YouTube. It's amazing. Absolutely amazing what's going on. Okay, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA. See, this is one of the many ways that the president can actually get things done, even though he doesn't control the House or Senate. He does control FEMA. Right. These federal agencies that are cabinet agencies that are part of the White House, they have the power to make rules and change the rules of the game, as it were, within certain boundaries defined by Congress. And FEMA is now saying, OK, you want some of our money? We got lots of money. But if you want some FEMA money, which is hundreds of millions of dollars, you have to be planning for global climate change. If a state has a climate denier governor that doesn't work or want to accept a plan, that would risk mitigation work not getting done because of politics, said Becky Hammer, an attorney with the Natural Resources Defense Council's water program. The governor would be increasing the risk to citizens in that state because of his climate beliefs. Starting in March of next year, unfortunately, a lot of this really isn't going to have consequential effect until after President Obama is no longer president. But starting in March of next year, states must assess how climate change may increase threats to their communities and include those estimates in hazard mitigation plans when they apply for federal preparedness funding. This could prove interesting to Florida, where state employees are literally not allowed to say global climate change or global warming. Of course, you've got Governor Scott Walker showing up to scare their kids. We've got Governor Bad Bat Boy is going to kiss some big old time grant money goodbye. This interesting piece here from Wongcat.com, reposted by Babylon Sister over Democratic Underground. FEMA to states, you want cash? Say climate change is real. Say it. Right. Okay. President Obama stirred up a bit of a controversy over on the Reich by pointing out that when everybody votes, stuff gets done. As I pointed out earlier, the vast majority of Americans want Social Security expanded, not cut. The vast majority of Americans want to do away with free trade deals. They want to go back to trade the fair trade that's good for the United States. The vast majority of Americans would like big corporations broken up, particularly the banksters, but in every sector. But none of those things are going to happen because our political system is held captive by a party that is owned, the Republican Party, that is owned by probably fewer than 300 very, very wealthy people. A very small handful of very rich people are controlling this political party, the Republican Party, which now controls the United States. And they're saying, you will not do anything favorable to the United States, including making more people vote or helping more people to vote. In fact, what we're going to do is going to do everything we can to stop people from voting. So Paul Weyrich, who talks about, you know, our leverage in the elections candidly goes up as the voting populace goes down. Paul Weyrich creates ALEC. ALEC creates these laws that make it harder for people to vote. They get passed in state after state after state, these voter suppression ID laws. And the president comes out and says, this is nonsense. Here he is.
In Australia and some other countries, there's mandatory voting. It would be transformative if everybody voted. That would counteract money more than anything. If everybody voted, then it would completely change the political map in this country.
And he is so right, because the vast majority of Americans really, you know, they hold to an image of America that the Republican Party does not. They are in favor of political policies and economic policies that the Republican Party is not. And not just political policies, not just economic policies, social policies as well. And if everybody voted, then you'd have more poor people voting, you'd have more young people voting, you'd have more old people voting, you'd have more people of color voting, because those are the communities that don't vote as much as upper middle class white men. You'd have more single women voting. And the president made the mistake. Well, it's not even a mistake. He can't do anything that, from the Republicans' point of view, isn't a mistake. I don't think he made a mistake at all. I think it was a brilliant comment to say, you know, in Australia, everybody has to vote. But of course, now all across the right wing blogosphere, you will see, you know, articles about how Obama wants to force you to vote. Obama wants to use the IRS to fine you if you don't vote. That's how they do it in Australia. Well, he wasn't suggesting that we should adopt the Australian system. It couldn't happen in the United States because you can't, you know, the Supreme Court has many times ruled that the right to associate includes the right to not associate. The right, and you know, arguably, if you're going to penalize people for voting, well, you know, the Supreme Court has in Bush v. Gore, they came right out and said there is no federally protected right to vote for president. There isn't. Sorry. So we, the Supreme Court, can take away Florida. We can take away your right to vote for the president. And in fact, a year later, in 2001, in November of 2001, when they actually counted the vote from Florida, keep in mind, it didn't get counted in 2000 because the Supreme Court stopped the count. When they actually counted the vote, they found that by any measure, Al Gore won the election in Florida and nationally. Al Gore was our president in 2000, but the Supreme Court inserted themselves and changed these things. So with more people voting, we would see America become America once again. So here's the question, and this is something that I've been chewing on for 10 years or longer. And I'm not sure I have a good answer for it. In the United States, where the right not to vote is considered as constitutional as the right to vote. In other words, in the United States, you have a right not to vote. As Marco Rubio pointed out, Marco Rubio came out and said, not voting is a legitimate choice. See, the Republican plan for the voting crisis in the United States is to encourage it to get worse. Because, hey, the Republicans only need the votes of the rich white guys. But what should we be doing to encourage more people to vote? I mean, I think voting by mail, as they have in Oregon and Washington State, I think that's a good one. It's jacked Oregon's voter response rates up into the 60s, whereas the national average is in the 50s, as I recall, in some places in the 40% range. So vote by mail, big deal. Early voting, big deal. automatic voter registration, what Oregon just passed and is going to start doing next year, a big deal. Make it fairly easy and straightforward. We can't use the IRS. We can't fine people for not voting. And we can't offer incentives. We can't say, if you vote, you will get something, because that's like paying people for their vote. So how else can we make it easier to vote? I don't know. Got any thoughts? At one point in time, I was a supporter of electronic voting. I'm not so much anymore. Although,
this is the Tom Hartman Program.
You have to ask yourself the question, if a bank can do online banking, why can't you do online voting? I mean, it's pretty straightforward stuff in terms of security. Welcome back. 15 minutes past the hour. Jared in Burlington, Vermont, watching Free Speech TV on cable. Hey, you wanted to disagree about Israel?
No, I don't really want to disagree. I want to make a couple of comments.
Sure, go for it.
One, the newspaper in Zurich this morning talked about the election.
Zurich, Switzerland? Okay.
And they compared the election to buying furniture for the Titanic.
Furniture for a tank?
For the Titanic.
Oh,
the ship.
Oh,
the iceberg.
Right. The Titanic. Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, the reason that I called back in the dark ages, 58, when I was a student at SAIS, and President Eisenhower put on a 2-day symposium at the Mayflower, talking about the role of the United States in the world.
Mm-hmm.
The afternoon of the second day was an open mic chaired by the Vice President Nixon. During this, an Israeli got up and made a statement. Let me tell you about these Arabs. You know, you can't trust them. They're killing our people. And shortly thereafter, a Palestinian got up and said, let me tell you about these Jews. They're killing our people. And my point is, I think it's in the DNA of both the Palestinians and the Israelis that we don't trust each other. We don't like each other. We don't want anything to do with each other. So, I as awful as it sounds, I think it will be a more than an uphill battle.
I don't disagree, but, you know, F.W. de Klerk would have said the same thing, or P.W. Botha would have said the same thing about South Africa. They would have said, oh, yeah, well, you know, we're keeping whites and blacks apart because they don't like each other, and, you know, it's better, it reduces crime, all that. It turned out it was nonsense. And
what I think we have to do is to recognize, I think what Washington has to recognize, is that they're paddling against the DNA in both countries.
Right.
And I don't think that an outside force, us or anybody else, can change that until we recognize, and I don't think we have, until we recognize that these two people just don't want anything to do with each other.
Yeah. I think that the Israeli desire not to have anything to do with the Palestinians might change if our $3 billion a year went away.
I couldn't agree with you more.
I think if there was some incentive for them to work things out, suddenly you'd have two very peaceful countries next to each other. I really think we can make that happen. If we can prevent Netanyahu from...
Imagine what would happen if Obama made this suggestion?
Oh, if Obama made the suggestion, it would automatically get rejected by both the Netanyahu and all the Republicans in the United States. Yeah.
Hey, listen. I always enjoy listening to you and the people that call in.
Thank you, Jared. Let me just add. I think Obama could actually do what we're discussing here. He could say, "Okay, that's it. We're going to reevaluate foreign aid to Israel." I don't know that he has the power to do that, though. I mean, it's passed by Congress. That's something I need to look into. But if he has the power to do that, he could do it, and you know, let them complain. Jared, thank you for the call. Thanks for your kind words. 20 minutes past the hour. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Randy in Riverside, Illinois. Hey, Randy. Thanks for listening to WCPT. What's up?
Yeah,
This is Rudy, Tom.
Oh, Rudy. I'm sorry. Hey, Rudy.
Yeah, could you agree that for a very long time, Israeli political parties and Israeli politicians like Mr. Netanyahu have used extreme lobbying and amassed a great deal of money to influence senators and congressional people in our government to go along with what they want, including $3 billion a year that they get? And Mr. Netanyahu is not a good ally of the United States after what he has said and done.
I agree. I don't disagree with your premise at all, Rudy. And it's not just Israeli lobbyists, by the way. The largest lobbyist, or the largest, let's say, faction, outside influence in this whole thing, is Shelley Adelson, who owns the largest newspaper in Israel, which is given away for free. He started it from scratch to fund Netanyahu or to support Netanyahu, because the Israeli laws on campaign donations prevent Shelley Adelson from becoming an angel for Netanyahu the way that the Koch brothers can just raise $1 billion and hand it to Scott Walker. In Israel, you can't do that. So in Israel, what Shelley Adelson did is he took his money and he bought a newspaper or built a newspaper and gave it to Netanyahu, essentially. So, yeah.
Is Mr. Adelson, is he a dual citizen by any chance?
No, he's actually, he may well be. I don't honestly know. He's, you know, Israel is his big thing. He's an American. But he's making a lot of his money in China. He's making his money in Macau and, you know, wants to bring it back to the United States at a low tax rate. And this administration, the Democrats said, no, you're not going to do that. And apparently that's one of the things that put a burr under his saddle. Rudy, I got to move along, but thank you for the call. Cedric in Tampa, Florida. Hey, Cedric, two types of Republicans.
Yes, Tom. How are you today?
Great. What's up?
Great. Okay. Now, you often said there are millionaires and suckers, right?
Right. Now, I'm adding a third category today, which is the people who work for the millionaires.
Okay. I'm going to kind of give you something else to think about.
Okay.
The Civil War, back, they fought for the right to have slavery, right?
In the South, the Democrats, yes.
In the South. Exactly. Now, in the South, they had plantation owners who were slave masters.
Right.
Then they had the slaves who worked in the fields.
Right.
They also had slaves who worked in the house who made it think that they had it good because they worked next to the master.
Right.
So those were the house servants.
Right.
Put it that way.
Yeah.
So in the Republican Party, you have your slave masters and you have your slaves, and then you still have your house slaves who don't actually know that they're still slaves.
Oh, yeah. And that's the conservative Republicans who come on my show and who are promoting, you know, and the politicians, the Republican politicians.
Exactly.
And they get to hang out with, they go out to Palm Springs and hang out with the Koch brothers. And they think, oh, hey, pretty nice digs here. I'm doing well. And they're really just the house servants, to use your cleaned up word there. Yeah. Of the masters.
Huh. Right.
That's a great one, Cedric. That is a great one. Let me chew on that a little bit, and we'll see where it comes, where we come up with it. Thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. Great to hear from you. Jim in Albuquerque. Hey, Jim, what's up?
Oh, yeah. To increase voter turnout, I was thinking, why not have the election day on a Saturday? That way the poor folks can afford to take off work or don't have to take off work to go vote.
That's a great suggestion, although increasingly a lot of poor people are working 7 days a week. But your suggestion is a good one. And that's, you know, expanding early voting, just saying, OK, we're going to, you know, we're not, our elections are not going to be a day long. They're going to be 3 weeks long, for example, and just do it all across the country. Because, yeah, we've got 300 million people here. You got over 100 million voters, potential voters. Anyway, we've got it. We've got to deal with that. Yeah. Excellent point, Jim. Thank you for the call. Joan in Ithaca, New York. Hey, Joan. Thanks for listening to WNYY.
Hi.
What's up?
Hi, Tom. It's an honor to talk with you.
Thank you.
My husband and I met you at Ithaca College the year you wrote Threshold.
Oh, great. Thank you.
I listen to a lot of my friends claim to be Republicans, but I really don't think that they know what that means because their ideas don't match the party's ideas. One of my best friends is a teacher, and she cares so much about children and their education, but then she's she's a dyed-in-the-wool Republican because her father was and her mother. And and she's for birth control. She's for everything that's and for universal health care. But that's not what the Republicans want.
Right.
So my question to you is, what is it going to take to make the people wake up and see how their lives are negatively controlled by the Republican Party? Are we going to end up with revolution in the streets when they can't take anymore?
I personally think that what we're going to have is an economic crash leading to political chaos. And out of that political chaos, hopefully, will come something like Franklin Roosevelt, 1932, Abraham Lincoln in 1860. What we have seen, or for that matter, George Washington in 1776, or Thomas Jefferson in 76. About every 80 years in this country, we have a major economic and political crisis. We have a financial crash and a world war. And out of those things always comes a massive progressive leap forward for the country. And that's what I believe is going to happen. You find the diagram of it all in my book, Crash of 2016. But that's what I think. I think people are going to start standing up to the Republicans when their pain gets bad enough. I mean, this is the problem, Joan. Louise made the comment to me a couple of years back, you know, in 2008, I think it was, or 2009, and we were all talking about a depression. One day we were walking in or driving into the radio studio, and we drove by Starbucks, and there was a line out the door. And Louise says, as long as there's a line out the door at Starbucks, we're not really in a depression or even a serious recession. And, you know, I'd say, you know, it's been a serious recession, but it's gonna take food lines, bread lines. And we're heading in that direction. It's a startling number of people are now homeless and more people on food stamps than ever before. I think it's going to take a lot. Joan, thank you for the call. I hope that doesn't sound too depressing. I actually, you know, while over the short term it's bad news and it's going to hurt a lot of people, a lot more people are being hurt by these Republican policies. And I think that this is actually a positive message.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-536-2370.
It's an evolutionary process, you know, an evolution kind of two steps forward, one step back, two steps forward, one step back. And this is how we do it. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Well, this is interesting. Catherine Hiller wrote a piece for the New York Times today about going to score pot from her dealer in I guess it's upstate New York. I just read the whole piece. It was fascinating. Which reminded me that earlier in the week, I printed out a piece that I was going to share with you, and I'm not sure. I'm quite sure. I never got to it. In fact, I've got so much stuff here that I never got to that I want to share with you. This bumper sticker out of Wisconsin. My child is an honor student. My governor is a moron. That's cool. Occupy Teotihuacan. This is an Aztec society. And it turns out this is in the Proceedings of the National Academy of Sciences. Basically what they found was in this very powerful cultural center. This is from the first of the 5th centuries AD of Mesoamerica, basically Mexico, two volcanic eruptions had forced the civilization to integrate substantial populations of refugees who brought with them new trades that bolstered the economy, writes Scott Kaufman for, was this the New York Times? I'm not sure where, maybe it was the Washington Post. Anyhow, it's on Raw Story. It's a fascinating piece. And basically what happened was that the one percenters got so much of the wealth of Teotihuacan that the 99 percenters rose up and burned the city down. Right. Okay, the Republicans want to take away Social Security numbers. Got that. Woman gets 70 lashes. We already talked about that. Anyhow, desk cleaning. I was going for my pot story. There's a story here from last week that is about, I have two people's budgets. Jeez. Anyhow, Tehran Tom Cotton was bribed almost $1 million to send the Iran letter. Yeah, this was Bill Kristol's Emergency Committee for Israel. They're going to be all over this. Coming crisis in China, we'll get to that. The fantastic fungi. Did I tell you about this? Fantasticfungi.com. This is really an amazing website, fantasticfungi.com. And we're working on a movie out of this. Do you know that conservatives are more often, they tell pollsters that they're happy than liberals do? And so some of the studies on who's happy show that conservatives are happier than liberals. But this is really interesting. This was published in Science Magazine, the official publication of the American Academy of the Advancement of Sciences, the AAAS. And the headline, conservatives report, but liberals display greater happiness. In other words, conservatives are more likely to be unhappy and lie about it and say that they're happy. Liberals are less likely to say that they're happy, but they're more likely to behave like they're happy. It's really interesting. Relative to conservatives, liberals more frequently use positive emotional language in their speech and smiled more intensely and genuinely in photos. They looked at almost 5,000 people, all these, or 5,000 studies, excuse me. Our findings illustrate the nuanced relationship between political ideology, self-enhancement, and happiness, and illuminate the contradictory ways that happiness differences can manifest across behavior and self-reports.
Okay, so it's
almost interesting. I still haven't found my pot thing. This is from a physician in who was writing about the question, you know, should his, this guy, a colleague of his came up and said, okay, my kids are of the age where they're thinking that, you know, they're going to use intoxicants, and should I be encouraging them to use pot and discouraging them to use alcohol? And this physician goes through this point by point about, you know, which is more destructive, pot or alcohol, and there's just no debate. Alcohol is insanely destructive. Pot is arguably a medicine. Mike in Santa Fe, New Mexico. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hello, Tom. This is regarding the discussion earlier about predatory lending and stuff like that.
Right.
And what didn't come up in the discussion, or at least I didn't hear it, was the chief lobbyist for the predatory lenders in the New Mexico legislature is Raymond Sanchez, who was also in the Senate previously, but his brother is Speaker of the Senate, who is a Democrat.
So the Democrats control the House of Representatives in New Mexico?
No, just the Senate part of it.
Oh, the Senate. So there's a Speaker for the Senate in New Mexico.
Speaker for the Senate, and his brother, Raymond Sanchez, mm-hmm. Democrat as well, was the chief lobbyist on behalf of the predatory lenders.
Right.
And this.
So you're suggesting that this is a bipartisan problem, Mike, in New Mexico, that both parties are being bought off by the banksters.
Exactly. And this speaks to the larger issue of voting. We, you know, when we had our election here for governor recently and, you know, other elections here, you know, Democrats, you know, took a horrible beating here. Mm-hmm. And because of low voter turnout.
Right. And only about half of them showed up to vote.
Right. Because nobody was fielding any credible candidates because this kind of Democrats that we get. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I mean, we in the working class and, you know, poor people, I mean, you know, we're just being constantly told, well, you got to vote harder. You got to vote harder.
Right.
And it's like, well, you know what? Vote for people who are going to be, wear
gonna screw us.
White hat.
Yeah, essentially what we have, Mike, is we have a political system that is captive to and beholden to big money, or money, period. And big money, of course, has that much more power. And, all around the world, people are looking at the United States and saying, wait a minute, two billionaires just declared that they're going to spend more money than the political parties did last time on the next election. They're going to control the fate of the outcome of the U.S. elections. Yes, we all say. And all around the world, people are going, whoa, that is not democracy. That's astonishing. Mike, thanks for the call. Bill in Yorktown Heights, New York. Hey, Bill. Reagan?
To follow up on your earlier discussion of budgetary matters.
Yes, sir.
I'm always astounded as to how often there's a misrepresentation of on budget and off budget in the federal budget, off budget being essentially Social Security, Medicare receipts and so forth, and their outlays. And
well, they're not part of the discretionary budget. They are part of the budget.
Yes, but they're like you know, factored in, and you know, in order to put across a right wing point of view. And you know, most recently you had Dan on the show, and Dan talked about during Reagan the fact that revenues went up from $500 billion to $900 billion during his presidency. I'm not the first one to make note of this, but a significant part of that was the fact that because of the Moynihan Reagan Social Security reform, if you call it reform, in any event, what they did was to increase the revenue stream of Social Security.
Because you're right, they doubled it. You know,
yes, because the trust fund was running low during that time.
So oh, no, the trust fund was created during that time, Bill. There had never been a trust fund before 1981 for Social Security. Social Security had always been a pay-as-you-go program. The people who were working paid into Social Security, and 100% of that money went back out again to pay for the retirement of their parents and their grandparents. And what Reagan and Greenspan and Moynihan saw coming was that there were going to be so many baby boomers retiring all at the same time that there would not be enough workers to pay for their Social Security benefits. So they decided to have the baby boomers be the first generation of Americans in history. And it astonishes me that more Americans don't know this fact. Baby boomers are the first generation of Americans in history who not only paid for the retirement of their parents, but they also set aside $2.5 trillion to pay for their own retirement. Baby boomers, since 1981, people have been paying double Social Security, and it's to create the Social Security Trust Fund, which is going to go away in 2035. It's just going to vanish, and we're going to go back to pay as you go. And it's just a savings account for the boomers paying for their own retirement. Back to
you. It is very healthy now. And yeah. And my point being that the revenue stream, and you know, and a lot of supply siders say that well, the revenue stream actually increases. No, it does not. And the fact is that even though during that decade, 1980 and 1990, the GDP doubled, the revenue stream from individual and corporate taxes came nowhere close to doubling because of Reagan's
right.
Reaganomics.
Yeah, good point. Excellent point. Yeah, Reagan's numbers just don't add up. Reagan tripled the national debt too, and that really should be considered in the formula. So yeah.
When Bush lowered taxes, revenues went down. Everybody says they went up, and all you have to do is look at Congressional Budget Office numbers, and it's very clear.
Yeah. Well, and this is why, you know, at least $1 trillion, arguably $2 trillion of the current budget is the consequence of Bush's tax cuts. And then on top of that, you got another trillion or $2 trillion in the current budget, the deficit, or the debt, the total debt, not in the current budget, but in the current state of the federal government. A couple trillion of that is attributable to Iraq. A couple trillion of that debt is attributed to Afghanistan. A couple trillion of that debt is attributed to just lower tax revenues because of a recession. All four of those things, Iraq, Afghanistan, the recession, and the lower revenue because of the tax cut, all those things you can lay at the feet of George W. Bush and his administration. So anyhow, Bill, thanks for the call. Good point. We'll be back. It's 15 minutes before the end.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We'll be back with more of your calls right after this. Welcome back. 15 minutes before the hour. Devon in Blacksburg, Virginia, watching Free Speech TV on DirecTV. Hey, Devon, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Well, it's snowing here in the mountains of southwestern Virginia. Which
really?
Is-
Yeah, I understand that's our forecast for tomorrow here in D.C. That's not good.
Yeah, I would think it's headed your way, although the elevation here is 2,500 feet. So we're.
Okay.
But, yeah, be prepared. It could. Yeah, yeah. First day of spring. Hello.
Yeah.
So I heard that on the lines of getting more people to vote, I heard that San Francisco is proposing to let 16- and 17-year-olds vote in local elections,
right.
Which I think would have a synergistic effect. maybe if more people were voting in those local elections, maybe they'd feel more accountable, and maybe mm-hmm. that extends out to national elections. So, you know, and studies say if people start voting when they're 18, they tend to stick with it. So yeah. if we can get them voting at 16 in local elections on, like, school boards, I don't know. I mean, it could be a real empowering thing.
You are absolutely right, Devon. I was having a conversation with a taxi driver about this yesterday. he was talking about how he had been listening to this show where this guy was talking about how if you're feeling down, change your friends. That are the people around us influence us more than pretty much anything else. And I told him that back when our kids were all teenagers and younger, one of the things that Louise and I had learned was that we could influence our kids by choosing their friends, basically saying, you know, we'll pay for movies if you go out with these kids, but we won't if you go out with these kids, that kind of thing, you know. And we actually did that through most of our kids' upbringing. And what that is apropos, I tell you that whole story by way of saying that our peers have greater influence on us, particularly when we're teenagers. The influence is more than 100%, it's more than 200% greater. Our peers have more than twice as much impact on us than our parents do. And so if we can get 16-year-olds, 16, 17, 18-year-olds in the habit of voting while they're still in high school, so that the high school is involved in the process, so that the high school is, because 18-year-olds, by and large, most of them are out of high school, or this is their last year, you know, it's just the schools don't get involved with this. But if it was, you know, juniors, seniors, and freshmen, if they were all, you know, if everybody was voting, then the school could get involved with it. They could have mock elections. They could, you know, they could have debates. They could do all kinds of stuff. And I think it would be tremendously useful.
Yes, it could snowball, indeed.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think... I think that's, you know, we'll refocus also social studies departments on civics education.
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah, I must have heard the same story your cab driver did, so good on him.
Uh-huh. Okay, great. Devon, thank you for the call, and thanks for your suggestion. I think it's a great one. I think the lowering the voting age to 16 all across the country would be a good idea. How are we on time, Shane? 20 seconds. Okay, not enough time to bring a caller in. So we've got a couple of suggestions here. Lower the voting age, move the voting day from Tuesday to Saturday. That's going to be a little more difficult because I think it's in the Constitution. The way to get around that is to create a voting week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks. And, well, it's a start. It's a start. How do we get more people to vote? Do you have an idea? Call and share it. We'll be back. It's 10 minutes before you. Before the hour, welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and Mike in Seattle, listening on KBCS. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hey, going back to your discussion of usury and caps on interest rates, I noticed on the ALEC exposed website that there is a bill that would that states could pass that would prevent states from having a cap on usury rates.
Really? So state legislatures can pass a law preventing themselves from capping interest rates?
Yes, it appeared to be the only bill at that time that was dealing with banking.
Wow. Yeah, it's dealing with the bottom feeders in banking, which is the payday loan people. That's fascinating. I'm not surprised. I'll have to get over to alecexposed.org and check this out. Mike, thanks for the heads up on that. I appreciate it. Bill in South Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Hey, Bill.
Hey, I was listening to the discussion about the New Mexico legislature and what's going on there. And, of course, we have plenty of shenanigans of our own here in Wisconsin.
Right.
And it reminded me of something Harry Truman said once. And Harry said that state legislators are almost always controlled by the money people.
Well, that's interesting. And he said that back in the 40s.
Or the 30s. I saw it in, I'm sure you've read, and your readers, if they haven't read, should read, the wonderful book, Plain Speaking, about Harry Truman.
No, I have not read that biography of Harry Truman.
It's a terrific book. There are so many great stories in there, and Truman speaking very candidly about people that he'd worked with and worked against in politics over the years. So you can imagine what he has to say about Richard Nixon, for example.
Yeah, Harry Truman was famous for that, for just speaking bluntly.
Yeah, where the context came up, he was discussing William Jennings Bryan, who he remembered from his youth, and praising Bryan. And in fact, the context was, he said, talking about things that Bryan stood for, and he said, well, he was one of the first to come out for popular election as senators.
Yep.
Senators used to be elected by state legislatures, and you know how state legislatures are almost always controlled by the money people. So, in fact, Harry would have been intrigued to see that one of the things some of the screwier teabaggers have been proposing in recent years is to repeal the Constitution. Which constitutional amendment was it? Was it the 17th provided for popular election of U.S. senators? They've been saying you should go back to having them elected by legislatures.
Yeah, I think it was the 16th, but I could be wrong. Who knows?
One of those was the income tax, and the other was the popular election.
Right. Yeah, I mixed them up. Yeah. So, yeah, excellent point. Bill, thank you for sharing that Harry Truman quote. That's great. Bobby in Long Island, New York. Hey, Bobby, what's up?
Hi, Tom. I want to know why the Democratic politicians, they're so soft compared to the Republicans who are always in the news, whether it's Fox or CNN or MSNBC. All you hear and all you see is Republicans in the news.
Right.
I got a senator called Senator Schumer. He's the most wonderful guy, and I agree with everything he says. But he's passive. He's not exciting.
Yeah, Bobby, I don't know if you heard the program, but Chuck Schumer gave a speech at the National Press Club here 2 weeks ago on a Monday, and I read large parts of the speech. I was so blown away by it. My point being that Chuck Schumer is regular. I get his news releases. I'm on his list. And on not a daily basis, but certainly several times a week, they're pushing stuff out to the press that's pretty high-profile stuff. It's pretty important stuff. And by and large, it all gets completely ignored. And, you know, it's not like Bernie Sanders is not holding a press conference virtually every day. It's not like the Congressional Progressive Caucus has decided not to look for publicity. They're trying to get publicity. It's just that the media in this country is owned by big corporations and rich people. They are the ones who control the Republican Party. And they want to make sure that the suckers, the rubes, don't go away, that they stay around and they vote for Republicans. Bobby, thank you for the call. It's excellent point. Denise in Montpelier, Vermont. Hey, Denise.
Hi, how are you?
Great. How's Montpelier, my old hometown, sort of?
It's awesome.
Yeah.
It's cold, but it's awesome.
Okay, so what's on your mind?
I was thinking that we were talking about ways to increase voting, and I've always believed that our voting day should be a national holiday.
That's an excellent suggestion. Or even 2 days, like a Saturday, Sunday.
Like a long weekend, yeah.
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 I think that's
it. That was it. Thank you very much
for
everything that you do, and I love listening to you.
Thanks, Denise. Say hi to anybody in Montpelier you run across who might remember me. It's great talking with you. Drop in a Bear Pond Books and tell them I said hi. Mike in Fresno, California. Hey, Mike, what's up?
Hi, Tom. Hey, on the voting machines and the banksters, you know, Diebold's going to work because the bankster wants all of his money. But when you go to the voting machine, the Democrats and Republicans all are crossing their fingers and wanting it to go the other way. Here in Fresno, you have a paper ballot and it goes into a scanner. Why couldn't they have a second scanner that goes to an independent party, kind of like the exit poll people?
Yeah.
So if the numbers don't match, hey, something is up.
Yeah, they should. There should be, if not procedural and regular, at least random, backup scans of these papers. I'm totally with you, Mike. We need to come up with a system that is solid that we can defend, that people. We just have to come up with a system that works. And I think you're right. I think, the money thing, the previous caller who said, Republicans are constantly on TV. Republicans are constantly trying harder because there's a paycheck being dangled at the end of the rainbow for them. If a Republican can make it to Congress, they'll make a whole pile of money when they leave Congress. Mike, thanks for the call. So it's a matter of, really who's getting bought off more aggressively, who is owned more aggressively. So time, Shane. 5 seconds. Oh, my God. Okay, Jordan, I'm sorry. You're going to have to call back tomorrow or the day after. So we'll get back to your call. But thank you so much for being with us these 3 hours. And don't forget, democracy is not a spectator sport. It does require all of us to show up. As President Obama said today, you know, if everybody voted, it could push back against organized money. It could. I mean, that was the whole point of unions, was organizing people to go up against organized money, which is corporations. But anyhow, get out there, get active, tag, you're it. I'll see you tomorrow.
You've been listening to Tom Hartman. For audio and video archives, visit TomHartman.com.
Hey friends, Tom Hartman here. Thanks so much for watching and listening to the program. The Tom Hartman program is brought to you in part by the following underwriters. Identity Guard. Count on us to help protect what makes you, you. WIX.com. Everyone deserves to have their own website. ITMTrading.com. America's source for rare coins and precious metals. BostonBeer.com. Boston Beer, maker of handcrafted beers. Geico.com. Providers of insurance. IdentityGuard.com, total protection. Quicken Loans, engineered to amaze. And EcoWine.com, your source for organic wine since 1980. These underwriters support our show, so please help by supporting the people who make this program possible. You can learn more at TomHartman.com.